Welcome to the Corner Film Podcast. I'm Niall from Corner Film, which is a film website where I write about film. I'm joined by my co-host and best friend, Jack. Hi, Jack.
Hello, Niall, and happy Halloween, almost.
It is. I'm going to say it one more time. It's spooky season.
Ooh.
Don't know why I love that phrase so much, but spooky season, very exciting. There has been, I don't know if you've noticed, but there's been some changes on the site.
I have, yeah.
I mean, the most obvious is that I've been reviewing all horror films for Halloween, but
yep.
The other is that I've sort of added a little bit. So I'm just going to explain quickly before we get going. On Sundays, I'm going to do a little news roundup for the week just because I've sort of fallen off writing news. And yeah, it says on the site that I do news. So I figured I've either got to change the site or just start writing news again. So yeah. I'm going to do the news.
What's more effort?
Yeah, well, I figured it's an extra post every week. It's going to go up on a Sunday sort of afternoon. And yeah, it's just going to be like a couple of sentences about each of the headlines, nothing major. Mm. And then there's also, I've changed some scheduling around. And what I'm going to do is, on the weeks that I'm not doing the podcast with you, instead yep. of doing a mini or, you know, whatever else, I'm actually going to write a list because I'd stop doing the lists. And actually, people really like them.
Yeah, lists are good.
I was doing lists on a near constant basis for What Culture when I first started out on the site, and it was just sort of more of the same, and I didn't really want to do them too much, but it takes me about the same amount of time as a mini takes to research and script and record and everything.
Okay.
But the minis, just people weren't really enjoying them, so, you know.
Oh, that's a shame. But hey, you've got to try these things.
Exactly. And the list posts, actually, I've not done one in months until last week, but I noticed that the ones I wrote about underrated and overrated actors are now on the top page of Google when you search them.
Oh, that's cool. There you go.
So I'm obviously doing something right. And
yeah,
so I figured I might as well carry that on because they're fun. They're fun to write. You can be a little bit silly with them. So yeah, keep your eyes peeled for that every other Thursday. A little movie list.
Cool.
So I've rabbited on enough there. Jack, go on, tell me what you've been watching, segment one.
Oh, okay. What have I been watching? I think, like everybody else on the planet, I have watched Squid Game. I'm assuming you've watched it.
I have. Last week, I wrote, I think, 5 Squid Game articles, just one after the other.
Well, clearly, I have not read your articles this week.
No, well, do you know, I think they've only posted about 3 so far, so there's still a couple to go.
That's
up.
Still 3 I need to read. But
yeah, so go on, hit me with your thoughts.
I enjoyed it. I thought it was good.
Yeah.
I'm kind of bang in the middle, though, because I don't get the people who think it's overacted. Apart from looking into it, the people who didn't enjoy it watched the English dubbed version and didn't watch it in Korean, which
right.
is a whole different experience. I watched a bit of it, like, just to compare. Like, I looked online.
Yeah.
It is night and day difference. Like, it's hilarious.
Yeah, so I'm going to be honest here. I'm going to say I watched it half and half.
Did you?
So there were times when I was watching it and sort of trying to do other stuff at the same time, and then I would watch it dubbed so that I could follow it without watching. But there were parts of it I watched in Korean, which, yeah, by comparison, much better.
Yes.
Much better.
I don't know. I feel like I really, really enjoyed it. I enjoyed the first half more than the later ones because I just think it was a bit too predictable.
Yeah.
I think the reason it's done so well, and it's like the, what is it, Netflix's biggest.
Oh, yeah.
Thing.
Yeah.
I think it's weird, but I think it's because in general, a lot of casual Netflix users and people in general don't really watch Korean like cinema and stuff like that. And they're missing out because it's honestly, Korean films are just another level. And to me, Squid Game, it lives up to that certain expectation of Korean stuff, but I don't think it's the best Korean thing that I've seen. But I mean, if it gets people into watching more stuff like that, then I think that's great. But overall, I enjoyed it. Didn't love it.
Yeah, I was going to say, my sort of feelings were a bit I enjoyed it, but I felt like there was a lot of stuff there that wasn't really what people were watching for. Like, people like the mystery and people like the games, but there was a lot of other stuff that was a bit like, oh, okay, well, that's
awesome.
But no, like you say, I think if it gets people interested in watching sort of international cinema, then it's only ever going to be a win.
Exactly. And I have to stress, I personally am not a subtitles man. Like, I will never watch an English film with subtitles. I can't. It takes away from it for me. But however, with foreign cinema, you know, it takes all of 2 seconds to read what's going on. And then once you've been watching it for 10 minutes, you get into that thing of read, watch, and you don't even think about it. And it just opens up so many more, like, films.
It does. Yeah. And there are some really good films from, there's some great French cinema. There's Italian cinema has got some real classics. Like,
especially horror. Italian horror is another level.
And Spanish horror. There's some great Spanish horror too. So go on. Have you watched anything else? Just Squid Game?
Or? So the other night, I watched I think it's the fourth time I've seen it now, but my brother hadn't seen it, so I watched it with him and my girlfriend, and we watched Hereditary. I absolutely love that film, and it's my fourth time watching it, and every time without fail, it just puts me on edge. Like, it's such an unnerving film. At all the same bits, I get the same kind of like feelings and emotions. And I think that is just testament to a good film, really. Like, I love it.
Yeah, definitely.
And then on the flip side of that, watched a not so great film. Now, I know you're a Stephen King fan, as is Liz. She's a massive Stephen King fan.
Yeah.
You know, I've watched the main ones, you know, like The Shining. They're all great. I've had Pet Sematary sitting on my shelf for years now.
Wait, which version?
The original.
Okay.
Yeah, I haven't seen the new one yet. I wanted to watch this one first. My God, what a terrible film.
Do you think so? I enjoyed that one.
You know when somebody's read the book and you haven't, and every 2 seconds they're like, oh, but in the book this happens.
Oh. But
I was getting that in one ear, which I knew was fine, but I was like, can you please just stop? But, like, for me, the film just made no sense, as in, like, the pacing was insane, and, like, they would just cut to, like you'd think a scene was still going on, and then, like that, it was done.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
What the hell was going on?
I mean, I enjoyed that film. I've seen both versions. And can I just say, I have actually reviewed the newer one.
Yeah.
It's okay. It makes some changes that I think would outrage Liz as a Stephen King fan.
Would it?
But generally speaking, from a neutral point of view, it's actually an all right film. But
okay.
The guy, I can't even think what the actor's name is, who plays the dad. But he...
Well, in the original...
No, in the remake, he's not a bad actor, but I don't know if it's the way it was written or he's just so unlikable. Nothing about him that's redeemable, and it just ruins the film.
But it's weird because Liz said the same thing about, like, the character in the book is supposed to be, you know, really nice and, like, caring and, like, you know, a good, attentive dad. The guy who played him was so, like, the acting was so wooden and it was so...
Yeah.
I just was like, this is just not.
Oh.
I was so bored. I was like, oh, please, just finish, please.
Oh, that's
which
not
is
great.
Sad. But I swear, Stephen King adaptations have got like a real 50-50 success rate.
Yeah, they're either like people go mad for them, or just they're just not interested. Yeah. Can I recommend one to you though?
Yeah, go on.
Okay, I don't know, you might have already seen it, but it's on Netflix, Gerald's Game.
No, was that a Netflix one?
I believe so, yeah.
I haven't seen it.
It was on Netflix. I don't know if it's actually a Netflix one. I think it was, but it's really good. And I've not actually read the story. I think it's based on a short story, but that was a really good film. I enjoyed that.
Oh, that's cool. Because there's so many adaptations, especially Netflix has done quite a few. I think was 1922 one of his?
Yep, that's one of his.
See, I watched that and I, again, didn't love it. Is that the one in the field, in the corner?
No, that's In the Tall Grass. I've not seen either of those two, actually.
I've seen In the Tall Grass. That was not great.
Oh, Oh, that's sad.
Then that might just be me being miserable.
Possibly. It has been known to
being
happen.
A real misery. Not seen that either yet. That's on my list too.
That's a good one. That is a good one.
Anyway, that I think that is it. Anyway, I'm going to stop waffling now. What have you been watching?
Okay, so I, as usual, I've watched a fair few that I've reviewed. There's three reviews that are already up as we speak.
Cool.
There's one that I watched today that I'm going to review to go up tomorrow. So by the time this goes out, that'll be up as well. So I'll just list the names. If anyone wants to hear my thoughts, they'll be on the website. I watched The Guilty, the new Jake Gyllenhaal thing.
Oh, cool, yeah.
That was on Netflix, yeah.
Yeah.
Prom Night, the 2008 remake, sort of remake of the not very good original.
Mm-hmm.
That was weird.
Was it?
Yeah, I mean, again, just read the review because I'm quite proud of it. It was quite funny. But basically, the idea of Prom Night 2008 is that they made a slasher film that was a PG.
Right. Oh, okay.
I don't understand why.
Do they substitute blood for like...
No, just no blood. Just...
Oh.
This guy's like just committing constant knife murders and there's just like occasional spatters of blood or like a bit on the knife or something. But like right. There's no blood on the people. That it's so weird.
That is odd.
Almost worth watching just for the spectacle of it, but yeah. I also watched Wishmaster, which I didn't hate. It's just a kind of so some people talk about this film like they remember it vividly, and it, you know, but Wes Craven was he was executive producer, and
okay.
Yeah, it was 97, so it was just after Scream came out, and weird film. It's about a genie or a djinn that like if it can grant three wishes to the person who wakes it, then it can take over the world or something.
Okay, then.
There was sort of a bit of body horror, some decent practical effects. It was a bit odd, though.
Yeah, sounds interesting.
Yeah, but no, you can check the review. That's up already. And today I watched The Conjuring, which...
Oh, nice. I haven't seen that.
No, it's going to come up a few times today, I think. But
okay.
I bashed it a little bit when we were talking about jump scares and how we're not keen on jump scares. But it does its jump scares well. And as a film, I enjoy it. It is done quite... Yeah, I won't give too much away. But it's going to be a Hall of Fame review. So that'll be up by the time this goes out. You'll be able to read that. I've watched two films that I'm not going to review.
Oh, what? Because they weren't worthy or...?
Both of them, because I'm not really sure what I want to say about them.
Okay.
The first was, and you're gonna be angry that I'd never seen this before.
Yeah.
Hubie Halloween.
I turned it off within 5 minutes.
No, do you know what? I watched it. I didn't hate it. It was.
Are you? What?
It was so dumb. So dumb. But
it was so pain. It was as you know, I don't like Little Nicky's voice. And for me, it was that times 100. It was unbearable.
It was a cross between Little Nicky and the Water Boy. And it was just so bad. But
so bad.
I mean, I don't know. I didn't hate it. It wasn't a good film by any stretch. But
no.
Yeah, well, that was okay. And I also watched a couple of nights ago, I watched a film called The Bat, which is a 1959 sort of horror mystery.
Oh.
Stars Vincent Price as this sort of doctor guy. The general premise is this famous writer lady rents this remote mansion, and some sort of eccentric, crooked banker who owns the house has hidden a million embezzled dollars somewhere inside it. And there's a killer called The Bat, who is just like slaughtering people and trying to get the money.
That does sound kind of intriguing.
It was good, yeah. I love Vincent Price. Like
Vincent Price is great.
Yeah, he's sort of if I want to watch an old film, if it's got Vincent Price in it, then I know I'm going to like it to some degree, because there's just something about him that I find, I don't know, mesmerizing, I guess. He's just excellent.
That's the word. Yeah, he is, yeah.
And I'm a big fan of old movies, especially horror, like old school horror is
Universal monsters.
Yeah. And I quite like finding these films that like I've never heard of that I would never have heard of if I hadn't gone looking for them.
Oh, Can I quickly recommend, and I tried to get it for you as one of your birthday DVDs, but I couldn't find the DVD copy of it. I'll have to lend you my Blu-ray copy. The Toxic Avenger, because you will never have as much fun as you will watching The Toxic Avenger, because that film is, like, mental. Like, so, so mental, but so much fun. Even so much fun that they are giving it a reboot. And I think Elijah Wood is directing or producing it, because he's got, because he's really into horror. Did you know that?
Yeah, I did. He's done a few like weird, really odd sort of choices. And yeah, that's in my watch list. I've not watched that yet.
Is it? It's good fun.
Didn't he also produce Mandy, that Nicolas Cage?
He did, yeah. Which I will have to rewatch. But upon first watch, I did not enjoy it.
Again, I've got it and I've not watched it yet. So I'm going to... I'll watch it and I'll let you know my thoughts. But
yeah, it's super art housey.
Oh, cool. Toxic Avenger. Yeah, I'll I'll try and check that out.
Not one to watch with the kids.
Okay. I mean, I don't watch a lot of horror with young children.
I wouldn't even say horror. It's more just cheesy 70s, 80s, like gore and stupid, like Halloween.
Nice.
Like, just a real good time.
Oh. Okay.
And it's a musical.
It's a musical.
They've turned it into a Broadway musical.
Okay, that sounds enchanting.
Just watch it, you'll have a great time.
Okay. Okay, Jack, let's move on to our segment number two, which is... What's going on? So, I'll be honest, I did the news roundup for the last week, and there is not a massive amount. It's not...
No, a bit of a slow week.
Yeah, well, right up until Saturday when some stuff happened, but...
Yeah, true.
We'll go through the few sort of little bits that have been coming to light. Timothée Chalamet.
The man of the hour.
The man of the hour is... He just sort of randomly posted a picture of him as Willy Wonka to Instagram. Did you catch that?
Please stop the reboots. Please.
Well, no. See, it's not a reboot. This is a prequel origin story for everyone's favourite murderous chocolatier.
Nobody asked for a backstory of Willy Wonka. You don't need one.
No, it is weird. Like, he's got that the reboot that they did make with Johnny Depp tried to give him a backstory, and it was so weird.
It did not work.
He works better as an enigma.
Yeah, he just doesn't need. He just doesn't need it. He doesn't need. The backstory.
Yeah, it's weird, but they're making it. So, you know.
But also, can I just say, Timothée Chalamet,
Shyamalan, do you think they're related?
Well, they might be.
They could.
Is he directing it? That'd be great.
There'll be a big twist at the end that he wasn't Willy Wonka at all.
And it just leads straight into Dune.
Yeah.
Why? Hollywood does this, don't they? Every 5 or 10 years, like a new up and coming leading man will come, and they will just rinse every single role that Hollywood has to offer.
There seems to be like a pack of them, and over the period of like 3 or 4 years, they just sort of descend, and then they're in everything for like 5 to 10 years, and then they sort of phase out, and then they come back 10 years later, a bit older, and with they doing new parts.
Yeah,
it's at the moment it's Tom Holland. Yeah. Timothée Chalamet, Chris Pratt still being cast.
Chris Pratt, yeah.
It is mad. But to his credit, he is an exceptional actor. And he can act, definitely. He's done some excellent films already. And
I look forward to seeing him in The French Dispatch as well.
And do you know what? He seems like a pretty genuine guy as well, like a nice dude.
Kid.
And I've got to say, he's got some style. So
yeah, some interesting wardrobe choices.
Yeah, but he pulls it off.
Well, yeah, because he's skinny.
Yeah, well, yeah, and he's got, like, a load of hair.
Loads of lovely hair. And nice skin.
He has got nice skin. All right, let's stop commenting on his skin.
Yeah, it's a bit weird.
The only other reveal of about Wonka was that, I don't know if you saw, but a fan captured some video of them shooting it in Bath.
They're in Bath?
Yeah, they are.
What?
That's what I read, anyway. But basically, the reveal was that he was singing and that it's going to be a musical. first time that's ever happened that he's sung on screen, but it's sort of in keeping with the tone of the original, I guess. So
yeah, if you're going to play Mr. Wonka, you've got to be able to sing. I wonder if, I mean, they probably won't, because the only film that I'm aware of that did it was Les Mis, but when they use the live on set vocals that they capture, because that's what Les Mis did, didn't they? They didn't do anything in the studio. They literally...
Yeah,
what you hear is what they were singing that came literally out of their voice on set, as opposed to going into a studio and recording an album and doing it that way.
I think we could probably better broach that subject in a whole musical episode, because I love musicals. But
I'm down for that.
Yeah, yeah. But no, I know what you mean. Yeah, it's interesting, but it's also really not interesting.
So... Yeah, tell me. Semi-interested. I will watch from afar, and then I might go and watch it. I'm not sure.
Well, that's a film that you watch when it comes out on streaming, or...
Do we know who's directing it or anything?
Oof, probably, but I don't, off the top of my head.
I'll have to look into that.
Yeah, it wasn't... If it was someone important, it must have slipped by me, so...
Yeah.
There was also a little bit of news that turned out not to be news, which... I wrote down in the notes and sent it over, and it was literally about half an hour before that the news had broken that it wasn't true.
Right.
Michael Caine seemingly announced his retirement from acting, and then the news was everywhere that his next film was going to be his last. And then he tweeted out the next day that, no, that's not true at all.
He did a full 180.
Yeah. So it's not really news, but basically he was on the Kermo podcast, our friend Mark.
Ugh.
And he sort of made some comments about how there's not many parts for men of his age, and that he has some health stuff that makes it difficult to move his legs, and that basically he was looking forward to not having to get up every morning to make films. And it was interpreted, I mean, if you sort of listen or read the actual words he said, it does sound like he was saying, yeah, I'm done. But apparently not. I don't know that we will see him in much from now on. He did make some comments about how he likes writing. He's into writing now, and he's written a few books, and so that's nice.
You know what though? The comment he made about there aren't, you know, many roles for men of that age, that's rubbish. Like, well, Clint Eastwood is in stuff all the time, and also it's Michael Caine. Like, surely he can be like, look, somebody write me a screenplay because I want to do something.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was about to say, is that Michael Caine has a monopoly on those parts. If there is ever an old man part, it goes to either Michael Caine, Morgan Freeman, or Clint Eastwood. Like, but fair enough. He's 88, and if he wants to stop working...
Is he really? Wow.
Yeah, just let the man stop working.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's sort of not really news. And then there was a trailer came out, which... I watched earlier, and then you watched it with me just before we started recording, and you are not as excited as I am about it.
Not in the slightest.
But trailer for The Black Phone, which is a Blumhouse horror, supernatural horror thing.
Mm.
I thought it looked quite good. It's got Ethan Hawke in it. I think he's a child snatcher called, I want to say he's called The Grabber, which...
Nice.
It's a bit problematic, but... I mean, he kidnaps children, so...
Maybe he's just really good on a claw machine at the arcades.
Possibly, but I mean, his job is kidnapping children, so the grabber's probably appropriate, but...
Yeah.
Basically, it's about this boy has heard the stories that children are going missing in his town, and then he gets snatched away by this creepy dude, and he finds himself imprisoned in this room with a phone that's disconnected, except he can hear the voices of this guy's victims... telling him how to escape.
Yeah.
I just thought, do you know what? That sounds like the sort of film that I'll watch and enjoy. It's probably not going to be anything groundbreaking, but yeah.
It might be all right.
Yeah, I was quite excited. I thought that would be fun. I'll enjoy watching that.
Yeah.
Jack was not so interested. So we'll...
Wow.
Yeah, we'll move away from that. But yeah, if you like that sort of horror, check that out. It comes out in February next year. Let's move on to the big news, though, Jack. The big news that, again, it's still not really the news everyone wants, because it's DC. And DC, in film terms, DC are basically just a poor man's Marvel. It's
it's true.
It's sad, but true. And, you know, in terms of comics and characters, DC's always been my favorite. I've always loved Batman. I've always loved Superman. yeah, I'm a little bit upset that this is not taking off the way they were hoping, but they're not making good films.
Like it might have a comeback.
Well, see, this is the thing. So the trailers they've dropped on Saturday, we're recording this on Monday, so it's only a couple of days ago, they dropped quite a lot of information about TV shows, about games, about films. We're only going to talk about the big three because there's only so many hours in the day. The big ones are The Flash. We'll go with The Flash first.
Okay, yeah.
So did you catch that trailer, Jack?
Yeah, can I say, I mean, I would never count myself a DC fan ever. However, when I watched that, it made me think I've actually always really enjoyed Batman. Not so much, I've not watched any of the Ben Affleck ones, but for me, growing up, I used to love the cartoon because that was just a fantastic show. It really was.
Oh, incredible, yeah.
And then obviously the Nolan ones are great because it's Chris Nolan and it's, you know, it's going to be good. But the one, I don't know as a rule what it's regarded in the fan community, but I love the Michael Keaton Batmans.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. And Jim Carrey as the Riddler. Like, I love every, like, they're so like campy, but like quite dark still because it's Tim Burton, isn't it?
Yeah, so Tim Burton wasn't Jim Carrey, though. That was
that was
Schumacher. That was
that's
not,
it.
Yeah, we won't talk too much about that. But so
why?
Well, people hate that one.
I really enjoyed that one as a kid. As a kid,
I mean,
actually,
that's not the worst one. The worst one is the one after with Arnie in. But no, I really like Keaton's Batman. I think most people do.
Yeah. Anyway, my point with that was it's strongly implied that his Batman is in
the new one. Yeah, yeah. So he's basically confirmed it himself by sort of letting things slip. And I'm pretty sure that was his voice in the trailer.
Yeah, and the cowl of his head, that was his Batman head, wasn't it?
So this was my problem with the Flash trailer is I actually, as a kid especially, I loved the Flash. He was one of my favourite superheroes. And I will be honest and say I've never really watched any of the Arrowverse shows, so I don't know TV terms, sort of how that's going. I know that a lot of people really like it, but I really liked Ezra Miller as the Flash in Justice League. I thought they were just, they brought this real sort of frenetic, like, anxiety to the part that is, to me, that's what makes the Flash, that's how I see the Flash's sort of thought process.
What, like, sporadic and...
Yeah, and a little bit sort of all over the place and really energetic and sort of not really...
All over the place.
Yeah, all over the place. And it is different from a lot of the other sort of... Usually the Flash is quite a cocky superhero and just sort of full of himself, but not usually for comic effect, not in a like unpleasant way. But Ezra Miller brought a sort of nervous energy to it slightly that I just thought was really good. And when I heard that they were going to be in their own film... And that, you know, it's the Ezra Miller Flash gets the film and not obviously the TV one.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, do you know what? I'm all for that. And so Ezra Miller is going to be playing at least two different Flashes in the film.
That's crazy.
If you watch the trailer closely, the bit where they're stood sort of as a, there's like three of them stood talking to Batman, Ezra Miller's there twice.
Okay.
And it's implied that in it, the Flash will be going to like alternate dimensions and stuff. And that's how the Batman, the Michael Keaton Batman can be in there. And apparently Ben Affleck's Batman is going to be there as well. So Batfleck and Keaton are going to be together. And like, that sounds really promising to me. It does. Rip-off, doesn't it? Don't you think?
I noticed it, at the end it said in production. So I was like, okay, so they're still... Early stages. Definitely. As soon as I heard multiverse or something similar, I was like, right, okay, I see what we're doing here. And then, with the multiple Batmans and Flashes, I was okay, they're cashing in on
it's the mirror image of the Spider-Man thing, isn't it? It's the whole, we can bring people in villains and stuff from old Spider-Man movies that people like. Maybe we can bring back Batman.
Yeah, why would you not want to bring back two of your most popular Batmen?
Exactly.
It makes sense, I guess.
Yeah, my biggest thing about it was it's a Flash movie and the trailer was almost entirely about Batman.
Yeah.
It was Wayne Manor, it was the Batmobile, it was the cowl, it was the, like, I don't know. I feel like they've got no confidence in the Flash as a character alone. In sort of Ezra Miller's ability to drive the film to success. Like, I just felt like they're just going to, okay, we'll hinge it on Batman and
yeah, that'll get people work. In.
To be fair, it will get people in, but
yeah,
that one I'm sort of excited about, but not massively. There was also a teaser before we go on to the big one. There was also a little Black Adam teaser. Did you watch that one? It was very short.
No, see, I looked, because I am not familiar with any kind of, I don't even know if he's a minor DC character, but apart from, you know, the big ones, Batman, Superman, I'm not really that clued up on DC. So I'm going to let you take this because I'm not qualified for my opinion on this.
To be honest, I know very little about Black Adam. I think what they're doing, though, is, and this is where I think they're going to be doing the right thing, because this is what Marvel did when they started the MCU. They took a superhero that wasn't very well known, and they put, Robert Downey Jr. wasn't a big star at the time, but they put him in as Iron Man, and he had a name that was bankable. And
it was a gamble, though.
It was, but it paid off, and it brought him back to the A-list. But Dwayne Johnson is probably the biggest star on the planet.
Yeah, he is.
He's huge. And all I know about Black Adam is that he's a bit of a sort of anti-hero villain. So it's an interesting choice to have someone who's so universally loved play.
Oh, is The Rock playing him?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And The Rock looks great. So it was basically a very short teaser that just shows sort of what the character looks like in his gear. And sort of using his powers, he melts a guy's face and kills him. And
awesome.
It looks very good. It looks like exactly the sort of film DC need to be making if they want to beat Marvel or at least get on that level. And yeah, so that's basically all I've got to say about it. I will be writing a piece for Screen Rant about that tomorrow. So keep your eyes on Screen Rant if you're interested. There's lots going on about all of them. But the big news, Jack, the big news that we've both been super excited about.
Very excited.
The new trailer for The Batman.
Yes. Is,
so how many times have you watched it?
Quite a few. I never actually thought I'd be excited for a DC film, but like, this DC EU, is that what they call it?
Mm-hmm. But
I could not care less about. Like, the movies... The thing is, the budgets on them are like outrageous, aren't they? They're like, but to me, for some reason, in comparison to Marvel, they just look not cheap, but like it just looks tacky.
It's, yeah. So
it's a stylistic choice.
In terms of the DCEU, I actually had a really good chat with Oliver when he came on. We had a good talk about that and about sort of what works, what doesn't work, where they go wrong. Yeah, I don't believe that the Batman is part of that at all.
No, this is what I was going to say.
Yeah, this is so separate and it's so different in tone that
it's the same kind of thing they had with Joker, where it's its own independent thing, and they've kind of got, I guess, more creative control over to how, you know, dark or whatever.
Yeah,
whatever style they want to take it.
What I think is happening personally is they've got Batman for the DCEU, they've got Ben Affleck, and to be perfectly honest, I quite like Batman. I don't hate his Batman at all. But he's not had his own film. He had Batman versus Superman, Justice League, and now he's supporting in The Flash. And what I think what they'll do is they'll keep Batman as a supporting character in the DCEU. He's a major star still, but he's not getting his own film at present. And then they'll have probably a separate Batman universe, because I can imagine that they will want to get Robert Pattinson in with Joaquin Phoenix and have the two of them.
Can you imagine Rob Pattinson and Joaquin Phoenix? Like, those two are, like, personally, I think they are like next level actors. Like, they are the best of the best at the moment.
Exactly. And I think there's scope to do sort of slightly more artistic superhero films with them that don't necessarily have to operate in this wider DC thing, because tonally it is quite jarring. The way Batman is in sort of relation to a lot of the other DC superheroes is there's a lot of dissonance there. And I think getting him right in line with the Justice League is tricky, but I also think they do it quite well. I didn't hate, again, you know, Ben Affleck's done a pretty good job and I don't think he's bad in the DCEU, but I don't think on his own, I don't think he would hold up because of the style they've gone for, the sort of character they've gone for. I just think a film with just him would be really boring, like really boring. And what this new trailer shows is, again, I've picked up a few pieces on this and they'll be going up over the course of the week on Screen Rant about the Batman and about sort of what this trailer kind of indicates about the film, what to expect, why this looks so promising. And it's so... I've just written today, this afternoon, actually, I wrote a piece about how brutal it is and how Robert Pattinson sort of... The line he made in there about... The line about fear, about how it's a tool and how the bat symbol's not just a... It's not just a call, it's a, you know... And... Yeah, it just looks exceptional. Like, I cannot wait for this film.
Yeah, I agree. And it's exciting for me because the expectations until Joker came out have always been bottom of the barrel. Like, I will never watch them. And going into this, not knowing really, I mean, I know the basics of Batman and the kind of lore. I don't know the ins and outs. I'm not a massive fan. So for me, going into it, not knowing what, you know, I should or shouldn't be knowing, it's quite exciting because I can just appreciate it with fresh eyes, which is rarely the case.
I mean, so Batman to me, I know nearly everything there is to know about Batman, love Batman. But to me, Batman is the most versatile of any superhero. You've
really
got so much scope to sort of, you know, when he started out, it was really like silly, just gadgets. Yeah. And he was a detective more than he was anything else. And you know, you can do that whole, you can have your Adam West campy nonsense and you can have your, you know, your George Clooney bat nips and it's sort of colourful, like sort of zany world. But you can also have the sort of Tim Burton gothic. You can have the Christopher Nolan gritty. You can have what looks like a really brutal, quite sort of, I don't know, like pulpy film. Like this looks incredible. And yeah, just can't wait. So
it should be a good one.
Yeah. I think that's actually the news, Jack. I think we're done with
it. It is.
Yeah.
However, just very quickly, I have just checked IMDb to see who's directing Wonka. I take back everything I've said. Count me 100% in.
Go on, who is it?
It's Paul King, who has helmed one of my favourite films ever, Paddington and Paddington 2.
No.
Yep. And I didn't realise he also directed The Mighty Boosh. So, I mean, you think about how mental The Mighty Boosh is.
That quirkiness. And Paddington 2 were
this actually
excellent.
Paddington is literally such
that's
a great film. So actually I take everything back. Timothy, I'm so sorry. I cannot wait to see intriguing backstory.
But that's what I was gonna say though about him, is he doesn't, like, he's done so many sort of arty, like,
he's done it all, hasn't he?
And I was just thinking, I don't know, doing all this mainstream stuff seems a little bit like, I don't know, he's like a sort of quirky dude, isn't he? I don't know.
Yeah, he looks,
well, we'll take back some of the Wonka comments and give it a fair shake.
Cannot wait.
Yeah. Okay, Jack, are you ready for segment 3?
Niall.
Let the games begin.
Yes, it is Let the Games Begin. I'm going to be just perfectly honest in my setup of this. I could not come up with a good idea for
neither could I, which is worrying considering how much we enjoy Halloween. I was really trying.
Yeah, I mean, so last week's, for anyone who's not listened, last week's was such a weird episode, but it was a lot of fun.
One.
Yeah, it was the death match at the Overlook Hotel, and it was a simulated Hunger Games featuring iconic horror characters. And it was a bit different to what we usually do, but
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was fun. It was silly. And we obviously had to top that because this is the Halloween episode. And it took me a very long time to come up with any sort of concept whatsoever. And we just messaged each other and dropped this little idea. And we were like, yeah, let's do that. That'll work.
That'll do.
So I have tentatively and a little embarrassingly just called this Halloween of Fame.
Ba-dum-tsh.
I'm not proud of it. I'm not proud of it.
Look, it does the job.
It does. It describes what we're doing. And it will look good as a title for the episode. So, you know, so basically what we've done is we've come up with a sort of award show, except we've not done it like anyone else would ever do an award show. But basically, we've come up with some categories and we're going to just talk about which films we think do them best.
And who's going to walk away with that all-important golden statue?
Exactly, the golden pumpkin statue.
Yeah, I got nothing. The golden ghoul.
Perfect. So, we'll get started. We've got some of the sort of, I guess, smaller categories first, building up to the big ones. So our first category is best spooky music. What have you got for best spooky music, Jack?
So when I was looking at the list, and obviously this is a Halloween episode, I immediately went to like horror, but then I thought no, because Halloween isn't just limited to horror. You've got Halloweeny films, you know, like Hocus Pocus, people class stuff like Edward Scissorhands as Halloween.
Yeah, I would say there's an element.
So a lot of my list isn't technically straight up horror. It's kind of Halloween-esque films. So bear that in mind. So, what was it? Best spooky music.
Yep.
So immediately the one, when I think of like horror Halloween music, I think the Halloween theme.
Yeah.
But spooky definitely defines the next one, as well as like eerie and kind of almost magical, but the soundtrack to Coraline, that soundtrack is, I think we've talked about it before, but like
in the musical scores episode,
that'll be it. But the whole thing is just made up, like I swear, it might be in French, I swear half the words, they're not even real words, they're just kind of making up words, and it adds this kind of like creepy definitely Halloween-y feel to it. So those are my two, but I would definitely say Halloween more.
Yeah. So I kind of, there was a couple that popped to mind, like you said, about sort of spooky films that aren't necessarily horror. Corpse Bride, I thought, had a really nice sort of musical.
Yeah, it really did.
Score. So that's a film I love.
Yeah.
Nightmare Before Christmas, obviously, it's sort of a Halloween film, sort of a Christmas film, somewhere in between, but there's some good spooky music in that.
Yeah.
The one that I have sort of brought along, it's similar to what you were saying about Halloween, but I find this music much more spooky. The Candyman theme.
Yeah, I've not watched Candyman, but I do know the music.
It's got this really, for anyone who's not heard it, just look it up, because it's got this really catchy sort of playground music box quality to it. And every time I hear it, it gives me shivers. Like I didn't find the film scary, but that music, I have a real life experience that music reminds me of, that actually, weirdly, I believe I was with you when it happened, Jack. And
I'm so interested in what that could be.
We'll talk about it afterwards.
Okay.
Because it will sound weird to anyone who's not us.
Okay.
But so yeah, that was kind of my pick.
That's fair. For the fact alone, it gives you chills every time. Surely that's a good. That's a winner.
Well, so what I was going to do, we probably should have ironed this out beforehand, but you know.
Yeah, we'll deal with it.
Are we picking one winner from what we've sort of said between the two of us? We come up with a few ideas and we pick which one is the best one, or are we just each picking our own winners for each category? Because we didn't.
Well, let's do that, I guess. It can be a bit more different that way, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, there are a few that I think we will be in agreement on.
In cahoots.
I think the big ones, we should try and come up with one as well.
Yeah, but, okay.
Yeah. Anyway, the next category is best jump scares.
Yeah, we were talking about jump scares, and we're not massive fans unless they are done properly.
Yeah.
So with that in mind, that sounds really contradictory, but the first Paranormal Activity, forget the rest of them because you know what's coming.
Yeah.
The first one, genuinely, the jump scares are good. Like, even though you can feel them coming, they still get you every time. It does me anyway. And the other one I was going to mention was the Ash versus Evil Dead films. Have you seen those?
No, I've not actually seen any of them, I don't think.
You would really enjoy those. Obviously, Sam Raimi from everyone knows his Spider-Man trilogy.
that's why I don't know why I've not watched them, because I love Sam Raimi, Bruce Campbell. Like, there's nothing about them that I wouldn't like. And I've just, I think I've watched the first one once years ago. But
It's just a real, it's that real magic early Halloween kind of horror film where they've not got the biggest budget in the world, but they make it work. And it's, in some respects, it's kind of scarier that way, because the effects and that are so much cruder. Like, there's some good jump scares in that, but I will stick to my guns, and I'm going to say I really enjoy the first Paranormal Activities jump scares.
Yeah, that's fair. I hadn't even considered that, to be honest. I've made a list of these.
Of course you have.
I could not pick. There are four films that stand out as having good jump scares for different reasons.
Okay.
A couple more than others, actually. So obviously I've just watched The Conjuring today. Fun fact, I used to have a friend who insisted that it was pronounced The Conjuring.
Conjuring?
Conjuring. No matter what I did, I could not convince him otherwise.
Well.
So, yeah, The Conjuring. But no, so that has some great jump scares. Like, I'm not a big fan of jump scares. Like, I find them a bit... You know when they're coming. You learn to sense them, don't you? And The Conjuring and Insidious, both James Wan... He does them well. He builds to them well. They still get you even when you know they're coming. The Conjuring in particular, I knew exactly which ones scared me the first time. I knew exactly when they were coming, and they still got me.
That's a good jump scare.
Well, exactly. I knew it was coming. I knew to the second when it was going to happen, and it still got me.
Still got you.
So I've got to give them a mention, but I don't think they'll be my winners.
Okay.
I think for me, the winner... is, have you ever seen Sinister?
No, I haven't, actually.
It's, I think it's Ethan Hawke, you know, the grabber from The Black Phone.
Yeah, the grabber.
And he plays, I think he's a writer, and he moves to this house to research. He's like a true crime writer, and he's researching this like murder that happened there. And he finds a box full of all these weird old home videos. And when he starts watching them, he sees that they're all labeled like really innocent things, like mowing the lawn and, you know, stuff like that.
Who films themselves mowing the lawn?
No. But when he watches them, it's not actually someone mowing the lawn. It's, for example, them running over their family with a lawnmower.
Oh.
Yeah, it's... So basically, it's this guy, and he sat in his house, and he's watching these old movies. And in them, these horrific things are happening, where people are murdering their entire families. And it's this really weird sort of, it's not high-end horror. It's by no means the best horror film ever made, but the jump scares are just done so well. And it's, yeah, for me, it's I think that's probably the one that stands out as best jump scares, because it's just, I don't know, there's something tense about it. Without spoiling the film, I can't completely explain it. But if you've not seen Sinister, give it a watch and let me know what you think. But yeah.
Okay.
So let's move on. Next one is best cameo.
Oh, see, I struggled with this one because I was thinking, what defines a cameo? Are we talking about an actor from an earlier entry into the franchise or from a different?
Oh, no, just any like little bit part that's like a nod to the audience.
Okay. Well, then for me, it goes without question, it's Dan Aykroyd in Casper as a Ghostbuster. Like, it's just so good.
Well, see, I figured you were going to say Bill Murray, Zombieland.
How did that even... That literally didn't even cross my mind.
No, do you know what? Because I probably would have said Dan Aykroyd, but I forgot about it. And I said Bill Murray because I figured you'd say Bill Murray.
Oh, I feel ashamed. I feel so ashamed now.
Well, there you go. I'm saying Bill Murray. You say Dan Aykroyd. But...
I say potato. I want to go with I want to go with Bill Murray.
Okay, well then I want to go with Dan Aykroyd.
Oh, <let's>...
Okay. I do have some honourable mentions here though, because there are a few that also popped into my head, and I thought they're really nice little nods. Drew Barrymore in Scream, which I don't know if you can count it as a cameo because she was on the poster. And they did it as, they did it as like a big mislead because she was a big star and they didn't have as many sort of, I don't know, it's just like a misdirection thing. But
okay,
Drew Barrymore in Scream dies in the first few minutes, which I just thought that was
I've not seen Scream.
Well, you've only got to watch 2 minutes to find that part out.
I'll skip that bit.
Yeah, that's fine. No, watch it. It's good. It's a good little scene. But Yeah, Drew Barrymore in Scream. Carrie Fisher in Scream 3 was a great cameo.
Oh, cool.
And she makes this comment about how she was almost in Star Wars, but she got fired for sleeping with George Lucas or something, which is really funny.
Carrie Fisher.
But I think one of my personal favorites, I don't think it's the best cameo in a horror film, and it's not strictly speaking a horror film. This is a sort of family film with horror elements.
Yeah.
But did you see the Goosebumps movie, the live action Jack Black?
Jack Black? No, yeah. I haven't. I did want to watch that.
I didn't dislike it. It's fun. You know what you're getting into. So,
yeah.
You know, but at the very end of the film, and again, like most people probably wouldn't even click that this is a cameo, and it was done so well that I was just like, oh, that was so funny. R.L. Stine, the writer of Goosebumps, appears at the end.
Yeah.
So Jack Black in the film plays R.L. Stine, or a version of him.
Oh, okay.
And his stories are coming to life, and it's sort of all about that. And at the end, spoiler, at the end, he gets a job in a school and he's a teacher. And he is walking along the corridor and this guy says, oh, hello, Mr. Stine. And it's R.L. Stine saying it to Jack Black. And that's Jack cool. Black says, hello, Mr. Black. It's like, just like a they swap names thing. It was just
that's cool.
Silly and funny. And I like that
that's
one.
A good one.
It's just a silly one. And again, like, I can only imagine that probably only 1 in 10 people could point out who R.L. Stine is. So
yeah, I've got no idea what the guy looks like.
He's a weird looking dude, but he's very nice. He's a sweet, sweet man.
But big important question regarding that. Yeah. Is the Goosebumps theme tune the same as the TV show?
I can't remember for certain. But I don't believe it is, no.
Oh, well then that I have no interest, because that actually needs to go in the first awards category for best music, because the Goosebumps theme tune is
fantastic. Was like the soundtrack to my childhood. That was the next category, Jack, is one that you specifically requested, and I mean, I don't want to out you, but you did tell me that if I didn't include it, you would refuse to do the podcast.
I said, look, Noel, I've got one request, and if you don't honour it, I'm walking.
I feel like we could make a thing of this, though. Just to clarify, Jack did not say that at all.
No, I didn't.
I think we could make a thing of doing this, because this is the second time it's come up in this episode alone.
What's that?
Best Dressed.
Oh, Best Dressed, yes.
So, Best Dressed, sort of when I was coming up with my picks, I figured you could interpret this in a couple of ways. So I've got two picks based on two different interpretations of the category.
Okay.
Are we talking Best Dressed as in literally the best dresser, you know, snappiest, nicest outfit, best costume, whatever? Or are we talking like the best made, sort of spooky, like scary costume design?
I also put both.
Okay.
But both of mine... we'll do both.
Okay.
Maybe we could pick one snappy dresser and one creepy dresser.
Go on, hit me with your snappy dresser.
Snappy dresser, straight off the bat, I got a Jigsaw and a nice little two-piece suit.
What? The doll?
Yeah, the doll.
The doll, isn't the doll called like Billy or something stupid like that?
Oh, well, Billy, little Billy boy on his little Billy bike. Oh. He knows how to rock a suit.
Okay, I feel like we're going to have another Bill Murray moment here.
Oh, no, we're not, are we?
But I figured you would say this, and I was like, well, it's got to be, hasn't it? Beetlejuice.
Yeah, Beetlejuice is
online.
What are you on?
Billy the Wizard, whatever his name is.
Again, all of my snappy dressers are suit wearers, so I've got him, I've got Beetlejuice, because it's a great suit. I've also got Patrick Bateman, because, you know.
Yeah, Patrick Bateman is a great shout. I hadn't even really considered that.
Rock's a great suit.
Okay, who are we going with for best outfit?
Snappy dressed. Yeah. It's probably Beetlejuice, let's be honest.
Yeah, well, it's the stripes. It's bold. Like, he's got some confidence. Yeah.
And the hair.
Okay, go on. So, what have you got for spookiest?
I've only got one. But then also, actually, that does kind of come across. He crosses both stylish and creepy.
Yeah.
Freddy Krueger.
Oh, yeah.
Nice,
fair
nice designer little hat.
That just reminds me, actually.
Yeah.
It sort of comes into the last... Well, it goes into the last cat, really, as an honourable mention. But okay. There is a cameo in... I want to say it's the Nightmare on Elm Street, like the remake they did in 2010.
I didn't see that.
Wes Craven is in it, in the Freddy Krueger outfit.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, it's iconic, but I just think those jumpers on their own aren't inherently scary. The glove hand thing is quite scary.
Terrifying.
But I went a different way, actually, and I had sort of two that I kind of thought could be sort of creepy outfits. Leatherface.
Yep.
Purely because the mask made of human skin. Yeah. And if you've read my list from last week, the origins of movie monsters, you know that's based on real life killer Ed Gein.
It is, yeah. What a freak.
Yeah, he actually made a mask of human skin, and that sort of makes it scarier that that's Leatherface. Like, Leatherface is, we sort of talked about this a little bit last week, but Leatherface is huge and imposing,
yeah,
and just running around with a human face on their face. Like, I think Leatherface is a man, but I'm not sure.
Leatherface he crops up quite a lot in these nominations for me, but we'll get into that.
Yeah, so Leatherface was one. The other one was Buffalo Bill, and Buffalo Bill you could kind of put into both because, again, the suit made of human skin, that's terrifying, but there's also that bit where he's like dancing around and he's got some like pretty cool like scarves and stuff going on. So, you know,
that's true.
What are we saying for scariest? Scariest outfit then. Best
dressed. Oh, for scary. Oh, right.
Well, yeah, for the scariest dress.
Okay, gotcha. I'm happy with Leatherface because, I mean,
it's the apron and the, yeah, it's just like the dirty apron and the chainsaw, and it's just,
and you know the fact he's got a lampshade of human skin at home.
Yeah.
Leatherface?
Yeah, let's go. Yeah.
Okay, I can smell him when I look at him as well.
Yeah, you can, can't you? Through the screen.
Next.
Okay. Best victim. Best victim is one that I just feel like we've got to clarify this, because best death comes up shortly.
Yeah.
Best victim was sort of, I'm thinking best kind of performance as a victim, the best character who is a victim. I don't think it should be limited to people who have died. I don't think they necessarily need to die to be a victim. But
No.
So what are your thoughts? What have you got?
I chose Laurie Strode from Halloween.
Classic.
She's just she's in through some awful stuff, but she's also, you know, she is a victim, but then she's also a strong, like, you know, I wouldn't necessarily define her as just a victim.
Yeah. I've not actually said her. I did consider her, but that's the same thread that runs through my, I've got three picks.
Right.
So Charlie Graham from Hereditary, played by Millie Shapiro.
Yeah.
Yeah, that she is very much a victim. And that she just acted it so well. That character was done so well. And her story, we won't spoil it, but what happens to her over the course of the story is horrific.
Yeah.
Just during the story, but what's happened before it as well. And Florence Pugh in Midsommar, I can't remember her character's name at all.
I can't. It's not Annie, is it? No.
No. I don't know.
Is Annie Hereditary? Am I?
No, she's Charlie. Charlie in Hereditary.
Charlie.
I don't know. But yeah, in Midsommar, she's the main character. The acting there was just like,
yes,
it's such a complex film anyway. And
Annie.
It is Annie.
Danny has come to me. Well, Danny.
Yeah, well, oh, Danny.
Danny. Oh, I think it's Danny. Yeah.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. Yeah.
Sorry.
So that was just an excellent performance.
Agreed.
And the other one I've got, which actually I think for me is probably my pick, is Richie Tozier from It Chapter 1 and 2. Now, played by Finn Wolfhard mostly in Chapter 1. They both appear in both films, but Chapter 1 mostly follows them as children, and Chapter 2 follows them mostly as adults.
Bill Hader.
Finn Wolfhard's younger Richie and Bill Hader's older Richie. And I just felt like he was this character with, he was quite easily the funniest thing about the film.
Yeah.
And I like Finn Wolfhard as an actor. I do like him.
Yeah, I don't mind
Bill
him.
Hader is so underrated. And
yeah, he is great.
The levels sort of at play in the characterization, and obviously, again, it's based on Stephen King, and you know, there was a lot of depth in that book. But yeah, there was just this real, his story, again, I don't want to spoil anything, but his story was one that just, I don't know, just hurt, like it hit me. And I just thought that was just the sign of a great horror movie victim that I really sympathized with, kind of with the things that he was going through and the things that, that he would sort of do as coping mechanisms. And I don't know, I just felt that one. So
that's fair. But I think that's a good one, actually. Yeah. I would never in a million years have even thought that, but I can see why you would think that.
Yeah. So he's my pick, but he's okay. I mean, he's no Laurie Strode, but still.
Different, very different.
Yeah, I went another way. Okay, this is one that I think we're gonna have very different ideas about.
Right.
Most menacing performance.
Leatherface, straight up.
Yeah, I figured you might say that.
Yeah, he absolutely scares the hell out of me.
It's that same sort of Michael Myers, like faceless, wordless killer thing.
It's the presence, isn't it? It's the body,
the size, and the So I picked two performances that really stood out to me as sort of menacing and creepy, and for different reasons. And weirdly, they're both performances where one actor plays multiple characters in the same film. It wasn't intentional. I've just literally realized that. But the first is James McAvoy in Split.
Okay, yeah, I've not seen that, but
I won't spoil it, but it's because it's not really a horror film, but there are elements of horror. And basically, James McAvoy plays a guy who has, I think it's 28 distinct personalities, and he kidnaps a group of teenage girls. And basically, he's playing like this one is like that has the mental age of about sort of 8. And then there's one who is a sort of middle-aged, discerning, kind of well-to-do British woman. And then there's also like a really angry, like New Yorker guy. And it's so the way he flits between them is it's incredible. And it builds this real sort of like, I don't know, it's like an unease because he seems so at home doing it.
Too easy.
Yeah. But I think this one edges him out. It's Lupita Nyong'o in Us.
In Us, again, I haven't seen it.
Oh, you've got to watch that film. It's so she plays, we did talk about it, didn't we, a little while back.
We have done, yeah.
And again, I won't spoil it, but she, basically the premise is this family go away on their holiday, and in the middle of the night, they're menaced by a family of doppelgangers, of their doubles, who don't have very nice intentions towards them. And so she plays the mum of this family, Adelaide, and she also plays the doppelganger, Red.
Right.
And as the doppelganger, so obviously you're seeing the same woman sat there having a conversation with herself. And as the doppelganger, she's got this voice, this sort of like a throat thing that makes her voice go all scratchy. And it's just, I can't, you have to watch a clip of it and you'll see what I mean. But I think she's the winner for me.
I like her a lot as well. I need to watch that.
You do. She is exceptional in it, and she's one of those people who, if she's in a film, I know I will watch it and just enjoy it because she's in it. Like, she's that good.
She's going to bring a certain level. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So.
I'm happy with either of yours, to be honest.
Yeah, no, I'm going to go with Us, but we're doing separate, aren't we? We're making separate picks.
Well, that is true.
So yours can be whatever you want it to be, my dude.
Leatherface. He's in my list a lot, actually. That film in general is in quite a lot of these categories.
Yeah. Okay. Best effects.
Best effects.
There's a couple that sprang to mind, but there is an absolute clear winner for me, so.
I think of like good effects, like I think practical, like in camera stuff. Yeah. I think the Saw movies are really, 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 really good at that. Like the traps and I think they're really well done. So I personally would say like the first Saw in particular. Is the bear trap in the first one? Is that one?
Possibly. I have not seen her jaw. Oh, no, that's 2 or 3, I think.
That's 2 or 3. Well, I think Saw.
That was not at all what I was expecting you to say.
No?
No, not at all. But no, I can, yeah, I completely agree with that. My pick for this was actually, well, no, I'm going to go through the one that I considered. So
yeah,
in terms of what it looks like now, it's not a winner, and that's why I've not picked it as my actual one. But
right,
the zombie effects and the gore in Dawn of the Dead are, like, the zombie effects don't look great, but it's the makeup. It's just makeup. But the
makeup, it still looks great though.
It looks like, it looks decent, but it's the gore in it. Like, there's a bit where a biker gets his innards ripped out, and it's like, that was so graphic, and it's just, it was so groundbreaking, and just like, whoa.
They're doing that.
Yeah, and so that, I think, was worth a mention. There are so many that have exceptional effects, and yeah, like you, I think practical effects, I think CG can look good, but it doesn't ever look good forever. It, you know, it ages.
It also lacks, like most of the time with different CG, it, you know, unless it's done extremely well, that, but to me there's still this thing of like, it feels,
it doesn't feel real, does it? It's
hollow.
It feels lazy to me. It's like a just chuck that in on the computer.
You can't fake proper blood splatter, do you know what I mean? Like,
So my pick is one of, if not the greatest practical effect ever committed to film.
Oh, yeah.
The transformation from An American Werewolf in London.
like, fair enough.
I just, even now, like, having watched a whole thing about it, and I read how they did it, and I understand exactly how they achieved the effect, watching it, it's like, how is that a practical effect? Like, it still baffles me now. And that film is like 30, 40 years old, nearly.
It's pushing on 40,
Yeah, it's crazy. I think 85 it was, wasn't it?
Was it? I need to rewatch it because I watched it when I was younger and I was so bored by it.
It's an excellent film. Just for the effects alone, it's excellent.
But... oh, yeah, I can't deny that is cool. Like, I've watched that a few times, that bit.
Yeah. Okay, so best death.
Oh yeah, best death.
What you got?
It's really hard because when it comes to like horror, I love like the classic monsters, like Frankenstein's monster and the Mummy. I like those, but there's not too many like impressive deaths. They're quite tame.
No, well, I was gonna say actually, there's one that I've not picked it as. I've sort of got two that I'm. Can't quite choose between, but there's one that I wanted to mention that isn't, it doesn't really stand out to me, but it's groundbreaking for when it was in, I want to say 31, the Frankenstein film, that the one that, and he basically just like picks up this girl and throws her in the water and kills her. And just that wasn't something that was shown on film at that time.
No, not at that time.
That is worth a mention just for the sort of precedent it set, because
the ballsiness.
But go on, what have you got, Jack?
On the flip side of that, I love slashers, like they're my favorite, but then there's too many, none particularly stand out because there's so many. But I think it is classed as a horror, but it's a sci-fi, but the chest bust in Alien, like that's great, and that also actually would probably go into my best effects, category.
Yeah, I mean, so that was one. I'd say that's sci-fi horror. It's horror.
Sci-fi horror, yeah. I'm going to go with chest buster.
Because I considered that, and I thought it is a great effect. I also considered some of the Nightmare on Elm Street deaths, because they're, in some of the sequels, they branch into just like pure comedy, but it's, they're so sort of creative that they were worth a consideration.
Definitely.
But the two that I've picked are for very different reasons. This is why I can't choose between them. So there is going to be a spoiler now for Hereditary. Can't avoid it. Charlie's death in Hereditary, where she's gasping. It's so tense. Like, it's such a tense scene, and she's having an allergic reaction. This is a young autistic child. And she's having a severe allergic reaction. She's panicking and she's trying to breathe in the back of a car.
The music.
And she puts her head out the window. She's gasping for air and you feel like she's going to die at any minute because she can't breathe. She puts her head out the window and is just clocked by this pole and her head just comes clean off. Aww. And the brutality of it and the...
It's shock, isn't it?
It's, yeah, the shock of it. It was the first time you see that, you're like, whoa, what just happened?
And yeah, that's the best thing about watching that with people who haven't seen it. I was watching my brother's face. I was waiting for it.
It's done so well. It wasn't necessarily the way it's done in the story as much as, I mean, I thought it was brilliant because you don't really see it coming. You are on edge because of what's happening anyway, and it just comes out of nowhere. But it's a logical thing to happen. She kid puts her head out the window. She gets hit by a pole. She's going to die.
That speed, yeah.
You know, and I just thought that was an excellent death. And the effect used to show the head and stuff is pretty gruesome. But the other one I've got is, it's sort of a shock thing, but also there's a comedic element to this one. Have you seen The Cabin in the Woods?
I have seen The Cabin in the Woods, yeah.
I love that film.
I'm indifferent. I enjoy it.
I like that it... So when I watched it, I had no idea what it was. No idea. I put it on, figured it was just another like horror film. And I liked the sort of... In terms of a horror film, it was as good as any other sort of horror slasher type thing.
Yeah.
But it also had this, you know, there's sort of an almost spoof element to it that it kind of lampoons horror, but it's also an exceptional horror film. And yeah, I just really liked it. But there's a bit, and again, I'm going to spoil it. It's like 11 years old, but Chris Hemsworth is in it. Now, this is shortly before he got his real big break as Thor.
Yeah, just before, isn't it?
Yeah, it was the year before. And there was a bit of buzz around him. Like, I knew who he was when I saw he was in this film, but he wasn't by any means a star, really.
No, not yet.
And his character is probably the most charismatic character in the film. He's the jock dude who's like, I'm going to rescue everyone and we're going to have a great time and party and whatever. And everything goes to hell in a handbasket. And Kurt's like, okay, I know how to get out of here. There's a jump there. I can make that jump on this motorbike and I'm going to get on it and I'm going to go and get help. And he makes this speech and he's like, don't worry, I'm coming back. If I crash this bike and wipe out, I'm going to limp to get help. And I'm going to come back with choppers and big guns and I'm going to rescue everyone. And it, like, it's really like it's moving and it builds and then he takes off and he just out of nowhere, he hits this like force field and he just splatters.
Gone.
And there's it's just done so well that you find it funny, but you also feel the kind of, there's a hope in when he's given this speech, you feel it building and the hope is just ripped away from you.
It
made me laugh and it also made me feel empty inside. And I cannot choose between the two. So you're going to have to pick for me.
Out of your two?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to go Hereditary because I love that film. But I agree with the second one. That is a hilariously heartbreaking death.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, so we've got four more categories. Let's blitz through them.
Four more.
These are the big ones. So I think we're going to need to come up with one answer between us. But I don't think we'll have too much trouble.
Oh, my list is so basic looking at it now. The next ones are just like copy and paste. But I stand by them.
For the next couple, I think mine are probably the same. So, best performance.
See, I can't think of like an outstanding performance apart from... This is going to sound like it's one of my favourite films. It genuinely isn't. I just really love it.
God, like, I'm just waiting for you to say it because I've got it.
You know what it is. It's Toni Collette.
So if you've not seen Hereditary, your takeaway from this episode should be go and watch Hereditary.
Yeah, go and watch it.
Toni Collette is in it. She's the mum who sort of, she's dealing with this grief and she is exceptional in this film.
Yeah. You're exhausted watching her.
Yeah. There's no question. That's nice and easy. Toni Collette, Hereditary, done.
Yeah.
Okay. Best director.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so this one, I don't know. I've got two possible. I've got John Carpenter, obviously, because he's helmed some of the greatest.
Yeah.
And then I'm not sure if this would count, but it kind of does. But I've gone for Alfred Hitchcock because...
Oh, that 100% counts.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
I will say, though, I went with Ari Aster.
Did you?
I did, but not for Hereditary.
Oh, for Midsommar?
For Midsommar.
Really?
Let me just explain my reason quickly, because the reason I went for that is because that is undoubtedly a horror film, but it is so different to every other horror film I've ever seen. It's so bright and colourful, and it's horror and it's gore and it's sort of,
yeah,
those elements of it are so stark and brutal, and it just stays with you. And I just thought that film was such a sort of beautifully made, I mean, so is Hereditary, to be fair, but Hereditary was in terms of its tone and its look, it was a lot more traditional horror. But Midsommar was so bright and colourful and sort of idyllic that the horror is so obvious, and it, that to me just set it apart from pretty much everything else. So that's why I chose that. But yeah, you go on.
Hitchcock is kind of the master of that, like, or okay, it's not straight up horror, but it's you know, he is the master of suspense.
He pioneered horror. You can't.
The Birds, I mean,
also
honorable mention, I've only seen the one film by him, but again, it was, I've never seen a film, a horror film like it. Jordan Peele for Get Out.
Oh, honestly, I don't know why, how I didn't write that down, because both Get Out and Us are, they've got to be two of my favorite films. So Us has this real, I'll tell you what, I've reviewed Us, so anyone who's not read it, just go up on the site, search it up. There's a little search bar. It's in my Hall of Fame. It's just such an exceptional film. There's so much depth to it. There's all this sort of really subtle foreshadowing that you would never notice on a first watch. And yeah, he's an excellent director. There's a part of me that wants to change my change my answer there. But I think, to be perfectly honest, I think whether I say Jordan Peele, Ari Aster, besides the point, you've said Hitchcock, and you can't argue.
He's earned that.
He has.
I feel like Ari Aster and Jordan Peele are too early on in the game to have best director title.
No, you're right. Hitchcock is, and I don't think we would have any modern horror without the films that he made, so.
No.
Yeah, Hitchcock, okay.
Well done, Hitchy.
Yeah, we're down to the big two now.
Oh, big two. The most predictable two.
Well, so mine are a little bit less predictable.
Are they? You first, then. You first.
Okay. So, best film. Now, best film is, we have split this into two categories, because we have best film and then we have scariest film.
Yes.
It just didn't really seem fair that, I think sometimes the films that scare you the most aren't necessarily the ones that are the best made. So,
no, that's
true.
We're
talking, in terms of best film, we're talking about films that are best put together. We're talking about films. Yeah. So for me, do you want to go first, Jack?
I haven't really thought of one, but the one, actually, I will quickly say it because I've not really got a proper answer, but it's not been mentioned once yet on this list, and that's The Shining. I feel like The Shining.
Yeah.
Adaptation from a book or not, how close it is, I don't know, because I've not read it. I'll leave that to you.
It's not a great adaptation, to be honest.
No. As a film, it hits the mark, though. Like, as a horror kind of film, it's eerie. It's like, I feel like it does a good job of what it's supposed to do. Maybe not, you know, being an adaptation, but
I'll be honest here, I am not a massive fan of The Shining, the film.
Are you not?
No, so I'd seen it when I was younger. I watched it and I liked it, but other than the premise, I didn't really find it scary in any way. And
no,
it, not really. And it's, you know, it's okay, but I've always found it a little bit sort of, I don't know, boring. Like,
it's a just, slow one.
Yeah, it wasn't one that really grabbed me. And I, having now read the book, I can say that honestly, with the source material it was using, it could have been so much better. It really could have. And
Liz loves it.
Yeah. So, yeah, to me, I'm not a massive, massive fan, but I will acknowledge its popularity. And
that was just off the top of my head. I don't have a good answer, I'm afraid.
So I feel like we've got to say it because we've talked about it all the way through. Hereditary. I don't want to give this to Hereditary because it's had so many, and, you know, it's an exceptional film. I've got two that
yeah
I want to pick, but one I think is probably my pick for scariest film.
Okay.
It's in the running for both, and I'm not really sure which to pick it for.
Mm.
But the first is Us, which I just, again, like I was just saying, it's got such a depth to it that it's just, there's something about it that I can't even describe it. It's, if you've not seen it, I can't describe it to you. There is something about that film that I just think is, it's just so excellent in terms of horror, and in terms of the way it's written, in terms of the way it's shot, in terms of the finished product is just so clever. And it makes you, just even as a casual sort of like film fan, I think you will watch that and you will go, wow, this guy's really clever. Like Jordan Peele is, he is a genius filmmaker. He's, that is one of them. And the other is a film that is actually quite obscure, and I never heard anyone else ever talk about it, but I caught it on Netflix a couple of years ago. It's not on there anymore, I don't think, but it's a British film and it's called Ghost Stories. And
Ghost Stories.
Yeah. It's basically, it's about this guy, and he's a kind of a paranormal investigator type person, but he's a cynic, and he basically disproves like all of these sort of clairvoyance and disproves like hauntings and stuff. And that's his like job. He's on TV and he does it for a living. And he meets with this old man who is, he was like a sort of famous like psychic guy in his youth. And this guy says, I've got three cases I want you to investigate, because I think they will change your mind about the paranormal. And this guy's like, right, whatever. So it's basically a sort of almost anthology of these three separate stories.
Cool.
It's got an excellent cast. So the first one has Paul Whitehouse.
Oh, okay.
Again, if you're not in England, I forget that we've got so many listeners in like other countries. But
oh, yeah, apparently so.
Yeah, so many of our listeners are American. Probably won't understand who half of these people are. But no. Paul Whitehouse is a pretty famous British comedian. I used to do like a sketch show with another famous British comedian, and he's a big name here. And yeah, he plays this sort of alcoholic guy who tells this story about he was working in a disused, and obviously when they're telling their stories, it cuts back to what was happening and it shows you their, you know.
Yeah.
And it was this disused, like it's an old asylum, but we don't call them that now. So, you know. But yeah, and he's sort of walking around, and it's very dark, and it's very, and that bit really scared me. Like I was genuinely terrified watching it because it was so tense.
Mm.
And there's that story. Then there's a story about a young guy played by Alex Lawther.
Alex Lawther. Oh, is he in Black Mirror?
Yeah, Black Mirror. He was in the main character of The End of the Effing World. That guy.
Oh, him.
Another British actor. He's probably the one of, he's probably a little bit better known across the pond. And he plays this young guy who had this experience where he hit something with his car and he stopped, and he'd stopped in the middle of the woods, basically.
Right.
And there was something out there and he was freaking out and he was in the car. And yeah. And then the third story is Martin Freeman.
Oh, well, we all know who Martin Freeman is.
Yeah. Bilbo Baggins from the Hobbit trilogy.
Bilbo. Yeah.
He plays this wealthy stockbroker who basically is being haunted by a poltergeist. And that, again, just terrified me. The way it was done, the way it was shot, it was very, very well made. And that's why it scared me, because it was so well made. And it just, the way it sort of showed its horror. There was also a big twist in this film, which...
Oh, we like a twist.
I'm not going to spoil. I don't want to spoil anything about this film.
No.
I've just explained the sort of basic premise there. Like, I've not given anything away.
Sounds decent, yeah.
Honestly, I think it's probably my favourite horror film.
Really?
Personally, I can sort of acknowledge that maybe in terms of as a film, it's not as good as something like Hereditary or Us. But
yeah,
it definitely, yeah, worth a shout. But I think for me, best film, I want to say Us.
Well, if you want to say Us, you can say Us. That's absolutely fine.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, have you got one, or are you just sort of going to go Shining?
Nah, Shining, I feel, is a cop-out, because it's just The Shining, you know? And I don't want to sound like a broken record, and I'm going to get so memed on for being like, ooh, Hereditary, because again, it's another A24 film, which we go on and on about.
Yeah.
But I think, you know what, I don't care. Like, that film, along with, it's another A24 film, but The Lighthouse, right?
So I've seen The Lighthouse yet.
I cannot get that film or Hereditary. They're just constantly, I think about them at least once a week. Like, there's...
It's
something about them is so, especially Hereditary, like, because I'm not good, I'm not scared easily, but the one thing that really messes me up is, like, paranormal stuff. I'm not good with ghosts.
Yeah.
And that film absolutely prangs me out every time. It's...
Fair enough.
After I watched it the other night, I had to go to the toilet at, like, 3 a.m.
I
laid there and I was like, do I actually go to the toilet or should I just wet myself?
This is why you keep a bottle by your bed, just in case.
Yeah, I'll do that next time.
Yeah. If you're watching a spooky film, that's my tip.
Yeah. Having said that, I think scariest film for me, I would go Texas Chainsaw Massacre, just because it's so filthy and it just feels gross.
Yeah,
and
there's
it
a
is
grit
scary
to it. Yeah. Well, see, I was going to say the ones that have scared me the most are... So honourable mention to The Conjuring, because it still makes me jump every time, even though I know it's coming. But that, yeah, that's probably not, it's not the scariest. But Sinister really got me, because it's, again, without spoiling it, there is an element of sort of like family, like parent-child relationships and stuff like that. But also it's scary to me because it's this guy who, he's a writer and he's in his house and he's just watching videos, and that basically
sounds familiar.
This nightmare. Yeah. And I was like, I can relate to this guy. And then it just by doing something so innocent, this nightmare begins, and it's like he can't get himself out of it, and he just goes deeper and deeper into this horrifying experience that,
yeah.
And that was something that I think, again, I watched that at about 2 o'clock in the morning and I was sort of couldn't sleep.
Never a good idea.
It definitely didn't sleep after that.
No.
But like I just said, Ghost Stories, just something about the way that film was made just really unsettled me.
Ooh, that's good though.
Again, so weirdly, at the time, this is probably anecdotal and not at all grounds to judge a film, but I was watching it in a living room where the sofa wasn't, it didn't, the back wasn't to the wall. It was one that, like, the layout of the room basically meant that we had this sofa a certain way, and yeah. I was watching the film, and behind me was the kitchen doorway.
Ooh,
and it just really freaked me out because the film scared me, and I was like, I don't like sitting, and it, yeah.
I'm exposed.
I'd probably mind that one. Like, I don't remember another time where a film has made me so terrified. Because I don't scare easy, like, especially in terms of films. I just don't find them scary. It's an experience for me, but it's not real. I don't feel any.
Yeah, at the end of the day, you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's cool.
Yeah. Well, there we go.
Yeah.
There we go. Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah. What? Pat on the back. Okay. Well, Jack, should we move on to our pet peeves for this week?
Yeah, go on then. I need to start, before we record every episode, I should go back and listen to the end of the pet peeves from the previous week, because I always feel like I'm repeating myself. But I was trying to think of things that crop up in horror films again, and, you know, there's two big ones. There's a big old cliche. The first one is the phone dying at the worst time possible.
Yeah.
Not a massive fan of that. I think that's cop out.
Yeah.
And then also the one that everyone hates and you just literally want to scream at the top of your lungs is people falling over unnecessarily and don't get up. They're just like, oh, I can't stand up. And they're just like scrambling for, like, yeah, just get up.
Yeah, as an extension, if I can, I feel like I always on yours and just sort of add to
someone has to go on.
As an extension to that, when I watched Halloween recently, there's a bit in it where Michael Myers is coming at Laurie and she just freezes, completely freezes, yes. Rooted to the spot. I'm sorry, you wouldn't. If a guy that big is coming at you with a knife and you know he's trying to kill you, you would run. Or,
yeah,
it's called fight or flight for a reason.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Yeah.
And she just did nothing, just nothing at all. And I don't buy that as realistic. No,
you would, yeah.
I think that's, people do say, oh, well, I was frozen in fear. I think that has been perpetuated by film. because it builds drama. It builds the suspense of, oh, how's she going to get away? But she was right by a door and it gets blocked. And that's why she's not moving. But she's just rattling the handle. And then as soon as he starts getting closer, she's like, oh, I'll break the glass. What, you would have done that immediately. You would have done. So, I can see that. Have you got any sort of worst offenders for those that spring to mind?
I don't know. They're too frequent that none.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's in everything. The trip up and fall over and I can't get up.
Even in Harry Potter, old Mr. Potter stumbles and he scrambles when he's in the Forbidden Forest.
Yeah, so played out. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever done that. I mean, to be fair, I've never been faced against a murderer or Voldemort, but...
No. Well, that can be arranged.
Well, But, yeah, no, that's my little pet peeve.
No, that's fair. That's a good one. I managed to bring an actual horror along.
Oh.
Because I didn't last week, because I did not think. And... I just had something that annoyed me and I was like, right, I'm talking about that. This one is maybe a bit of a touchy subject. I don't know.
Oh.
But mine is, so again, I just feel like I'm banging on about it a little bit, but I watched The Conjuring earlier.
Did you?
Yeah, The Conjuring.
The Conjuring.
And I just was thinking about this and basically it's anytime there's a supernatural element to a film, it is, well, to a horror film, it's always assigned a religious aspect, always.
Yeah.
And I have my own views and my own beliefs, and I firmly believe that everyone should be entitled to have theirs. And I don't, I don't want to belittle anyone's views, but why is it a trope that, so like in any exorcism, any sort of possession thing, it's immediately you need God to save you and we need to banish
get the priest
in. In The Conjuring, it is so blatant, like so blatant. And so I'm not bashing anyone's religion or anyone's faith, because you know that's a whole separate thing. But the idea that, so you know, this girl's been possessed by some otherworldly being, by some force, is that inherently religious? You know, ghosts aren't, I don't think anyone sees ghosts as a religious phenomenon. Like,
no, I guess people associate with the afterlife and then.
Well, you do, but that's it is an association. The ghost is the spirit that can't get into heaven. And it just becomes this whole like, oh, you're possessed by a demon. You're possessed by.
Like, yeah, true.
You know, I know there's roots in it and like the witchcraft thing is all linked to, you know, Satanism and whatever. But. It's just so, especially in The Conjuring, it's so blatant. And it's, we need to get okayed by the Vatican before we can perform this exorcism. And it's like, you know, the exorcist and the, it's very, very religious.
It's played out.
Yeah. But also, it's sort of to contrast, there is the other trope of, oh, it's some ancient god from like, you know, Peru. It's like some ancient
Aztec
god. Yeah. And it's a stop assigning like evil beings to cultures that you don't know anything about.
You have no links to, yeah.
Well, no, because it builds a fear of like, it's like a sort of an otherness thing, isn't it? Like, you know, they had this evil god that killed all those people in that film. And I do have one good counterpoint though.
Yeah.
Which is Insidious, which... we've not really talked too much about it in this. I mentioned it briefly, but it's got some good jump scares. It's got a good story. And that has a thing about sort of spirits and they're in the sort of in purgatory, but it's not called purgatory. And it does address the idea of ghosts and spirits and not necessarily an afterlife, but sort of malevolent forces trying to invade. That first film, at least, does do it without making it inherently religious.
That is impressive.
It's a bit more about sort of astral projection and stuff like that.
Okay.
And it does it quite well. But I have seen most, if not all of the sequels, and I don't remember how much or how little they go into it. But I have a feeling that they do a little bit of like, you know, you might need an exorcism or this is a demon or, yeah. I just find that really...
Oh, the priest.
Yeah, I find it really sort of, it's become a, like the whole tripping over thing, it's a trope and it just it's not a good one.
Yeah, it's like, well, I've got nothing else to, you know, to blame it on. Let's use religion.
Yeah, exactly, because that's something that everyone can associate to in some form or another. But yeah, so, Jack, that actually brings us to the end, but not quite, because I'd quite like to add a little thing in at the end here before we before we do our like funny quotes and our funny outro stuff. I just felt like maybe we should just chuck in a little sort of minute where we say what we're planning to watch over the next sort of week or so.
Okay, okay.
Just thought it'd be fun.
Yeah.
I've been meaning to do it for a while and I just didn't bother to tell you about it until now.
Well, here we are.
Here we are. So, Jack, what have you got planned? Are you planning to watch anything in particular? Ooh,
good.
Or even good just question. Generally, you know, what are you planning to watch after the spooky season?
Well, spooky season will continue. Halloween, the new Halloween is out now, so I would like to watch that. Hopefully this week, if I've got time. I've got a bit of a busy week coming up, but
nice.
I also need to watch No Time to Die. And then I think I'll just carry on with, you know, the occasional Halloween film. I'm still watching The Treehouse of Horrors.
Nice.
I might watch Coraline tonight or tomorrow, because that's just one of my favourite films in general.
Yeah, good shout.
Yeah.
If you can, before Halloween, see if you can watch Ghost Stories, because I'd love to hear what you
Ghost Stories. Right, okay, let me make note of that.
I think you'll like it, but if you don't...
Is it on Netflix, yeah?
I don't know that it is. I think they took it off, but I have no idea.
I'll try and find it.
If you can, then, you know. Yeah, so I've got a few. I've actually got a thing to go to tomorrow, which is a screening of The Witch, which I've not seen.
Ah, yes.
Another A24, is it not?
This will be, it is, yeah. This will be interesting because you've not seen The Lighthouse either, and it's the same director.
Yeah, I knew it was a Robert Eggers because I like to say the name.
Robert Eggers, bear in mind, these are the only two films he's done, and they've both been massively well received, like critically acclaimed. So he's got a good track record. And have you heard about the new one he's doing?
I haven't, no.
So I think it's going to be a period. It's a period one, but I don't know if it's like historically
accurate.
I think it's called The Northman, and it's
sounds a little bit familiar.
I mean, I'm guessing it's going to, you know, Vikings, and I think the Skarsgårds are in it. Of course they are. That'd be cool.
That does sound familiar, actually.
He's built like a whole village. Anyway, carry on.
I'm excited to see that. I'm going to a proper screening of that tomorrow, which, I'm excited for.
That's cool. Yeah, nice.
And I also, having sort of talked about it earlier and when I was making my notes, I thought, I've not seen that in years. I'd like to rewatch Cabin in the Woods now.
Yeah, fair enough.
Because I enjoy that film and I've not seen it in forever. But other than that, I think before Halloween, I'm just going to try and sort of kick back with some old monster movies, like some Universal ones and... maybe a few sort of more obscure, silly.
Toxic Avenger.
Yeah, exactly.
Reanimator.
Yes. And so that's kind of it for me. I've not got too much planned. I tend to kind of just sort of pick as and when. Like, I've got a list of things I'm intending to watch, but you know what it's like. You sort of browse and you think, I'm just going to watch this. But yeah. So, Jack, that actually does bring us to the end of this week's podcast. As always, please do go and follow Corner of Film on the social medias. That's Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Corner of Film. You can also follow me personally at Lord of the Grey on Twitter if you're interested. Also, please consider subscribing, liking, rating, whatever you've got, this podcast on your platform of choice. We are currently on Podbean, we're on Spotify, we're on Amazon Music, we're on Google Podcasts. And I also upload it in a sort of video form to YouTube, if you fancy listening there. I don't know why anyone would, but...
if you're at school, maybe, and you can't go on your phone, you're in an IT lesson.
Yeah, do you know what? Listen to the Corner Film Podcast at school. Just do it. Like, just do it. But if I can, I'd like to recommend Podbean as a platform, because... all you've got to do is make an account. I think you can even just make a guest account where you don't even put anything in. And you can download the podcast to listen offline.
Always good.
Which, so you just get an MP3. You can download it straight to your phone, whatever. and you then don't need to be connected to the internet to listen. So handy if you like to listen on the go.
Yeah.
And it's a really nice little platform. So yeah, check that out. Jack, it's your turn for the outro quote.
Oh, the pressure every week. I hate it.
Well, I mean, I did have my dramatic Dracula thing last week.
I can't. I did have one lined up, but I know now that you don't feel too strongly about The Shining.
You can do
no,
this.
No. I'm no longer going to say all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. So I did actually have a backup one. What was it? Ah, yes. So from the character Lydia Deetz from Beetlejuice, Winona Ryder.
Yeah.
Short but sweet. I myself am strange and unusual. Aren't we all?
Aren't we all? Exactly. We have been Jack and Niall from the Corner of Film podcast, and you have been...
Ghost Stories.